All right, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231. It's September 23rd, Wednesday, and we're sort of done with the joints chapter, but not really. I said that in lecture I wasn't going to cover shoulder, but you know what? In lab, you might cover shoulder. So I want to go back over and talk about the shoulder a little bit. Even though I'm not going to cover it in lecture, you might be responsible on the practicum, not on the second practicum, but on the third practicum, right? So I just want to make sure I cover that a little bit. All right, so this joint chapter can be a little bit confusing because of the nomenclature and terminology that we use. So I want to go over that one more time with you folks. All right, so remember that we can classify joints in two main ways, two main categories. One is a functional classification, and one is a structural classification, right? And, I don't know, let's start with, to me, is the easiest, and that is the functional classification. How would you describe how joints work by, or how, something about a joint by how they work? That's what we're going to call function, right? So, can you remember some things about how joints might work? Okay, there's some that are partially movable. That's right. There are some that are completely immovable. And then there are others that are freely movable. That's a good term. That wasn't on the tip of my tongue, but that should be freely movable is the right word, right? Freely is the right word. But we don't use those terms exactly. You got to translate that into anatomy language. All right, so what is an immovable joint, one that does not move? Okay, yeah, you got that, synchondrosis. And then one that is slightly movable is a amphiarthrosis, and the kind that are freely movable are the diarthroses, yeah, the diarthroses. All right, and maybe it would be a good idea to have in the back of your mind some examples of some of these things, okay? All right, so that's a functional classification. What about structure? Maybe this is easier for you guys to remember the structural classifications. What are some structural classifications that all joints should be able to fit into? Fibrous is one. Okay. Cartilaginous is another. And then the ones that we like a lot are the synovial joints, because all the synovial joints, which is a structural classification, have a special kind of functional classification as well. And that is, all synovial joints are which kind by function? Freely movable, right? Or you would say, yeah, diarthroses, right? The diarthroses. All right, so some of those things you should have on the tip of your tongue for the lecture test. Oh, wait, I forgot something. Sign-in sheet. Let me get that out right away. Okay, we'll start here. All right, so be very familiar with all of the structures that make up a synovial joint. All right, so we went over all of these different structures. And if you think of a synovial joint, all right, all the components of a synovial joint, and then you think of a tendon sheath or a bursa, all right, what part of a synovial joint are you going to use in your mind to think about a bursa or a tendon sheath? Are you going to think about like the hyaline cartilage or the stabilizing ligaments? How about a joint cavity filled with synovial fluid? Some people are shaking their head. Ah, yeah, that's really what a bursa or a tendon sheath is, right? It's just a joint capsule which has a synovial membrane which secretes synovial fluid into the bursa, and that acts as a little pillow to reduce inflammation and promote motion between objects like a bone and a tendon, or a muscle and a tendon, that are going to move and bang up against each other. So it reduces inflammation and promotes movement. All right, so that's what a bursa and a tendon sheath are. All right, so let's go look at the shoulder. All right, so here we got the shoulder, and I see basically just two bones. Oh, you can't see a thing, can you? All right, that's going to take a second for the computer to figure out what's going on. Okay. Well, since we're talking about the shoulder, what part of the skeleton is that? Is that axial skeleton or appendicular skeleton? That's appendicular skeleton, right? And the shoulder joint basically has two bones that are working together. Anybody remember what the two bones of the shoulder are? We've got the... Yeah, somebody is saying some things, but I can't quite hear. The shoulder joint is made up of the... Okay, the humerus, which is... Ah, good, it came on. Okay, and the shoulder blade, which is the scapula. All right. The scapula is part of the appendicular skeleton, but it's also another part of a subdivision of the appendicular skeleton. It participates with the clavicle to form what? Something that surrounds your thoracic cage. What do we call something when it's being surrounded? What do we call something that surrounds something?
A girdle.
That's a girdle, right? And so the scapula and clavicle form the
pectoral
girdle, right? So this is the pectoral region, and the pectoral girdle surrounds it. So the shoulder joint is made up of two bones, namely the humerus, the head of the humerus right here, and the glenoid cavity of the scapula. And the acromion process participates a little bit because there's a very strong coracoacromial ligament right here that holds the head of the humerus up against the glenoid cavity or the glenoid fossa. All right, so since this is a synovial joint, what do we have over the ends of the bones that are articulating with each other? Is it just bone? What is this surface right here? Okay. So I'm pointing to the head of the humerus. It's covered with something, but let's go over here. Let's look at what's covering the glenoid fossa. What is that? That's hyaline cartilage, right? That's, you should have a picture in your mind of what kind of connective tissue that looks like and the cells that are in there. All right, so there's hyaline cartilage covering the glenoid cavity. There's hyaline cartilage covering the head of the humerus. All right, so that just allows these two surfaces to move with respect to each other without grinding each other away. That's very important. All right, and there's a fluid that lubricates these surfaces. And there's a fluid that nourishes, to a little degree anyway, the cells that are in that hyaline cartilage. What's the fluid that provides lubrication and nourishes the cells of the hyaline cartilage?
Synovial.
That's the synovial fluid we see right in here. All right, and the synovial fluid is found in the joint cavity. All right, and what's the material that secretes that synovial fluid? Is it the hyaline cartilage? It is the synovial membrane, right? And I can see a bit of the synovial membrane right here. Okay, and some synovial membrane right here, secreting synovial fluid. All right, so there is right below the hyaline cartilage, there is some fibrocartilage that is sticking out laterally from the margins or the edges of the glenoid cavity. And these act to make the glenoid cavity deeper, right? And these are what we call this is the glenoid labrum, right? And so this enlarges the depth of the glenoid fossa or the glenoid cavity, and that stabilizes the shoulder joint. That makes the socket a little bit deeper, right? Because if you just look at the glenoid cavity, it's very, very shallow if you just look at the bone, like what we see. All right, and then superficial to the synovial membrane, we have the fibrous capsule. All right, so these are all really good parts of a synovial joint that you should be aware of. All right, and the fibrous capsule completely surrounds the head of the humerus, and there are even some muscles that attach to this fibrous capsule, which we're going to talk about maybe in about a week and a half. Some things that form the rotator cuff actually become integral parts of the fibrous capsule. Maybe some of you have heard rotator cuff, and there's four important muscles that go across the shoulder. We'll look forward to talking about that next week or the week after. All right, so that is the That's the synovial joint of the shoulder. But there are some other things, right? There is a bursa between the head of the humerus and the acromion process right here. We call that the subacromial bursa. Now, how would you be able to remember the name of this bursa right here? And can you see this is like a little pillow that looks very much like a joint capsule? Okay, because we got synovial fluid in here, right? We would have a synovial membrane, and then we have a fibrous capsule surrounding that. And this thing can roll around just a little bit, and it's going to protect the head of the humerus. And it's also going to protect a tendon that goes over the head of the humerus from being banged up against this acromial process. All right, so let's go back to nomenclature. Why is this pretty easy to remember? This is the subacromial bursa.
Because it's below the acromion.
Yeah, it's below the acromion process, right? Sub means below, and it just looks like a pillow, so it looks like a bursa to me. And you should know this to be the acromial process. So subacromial bursa is really easy to remember. Okay. All right, so here is a tendon that's coming from the biceps muscle, which is one of the stronger muscles in your anterior arm for flexing your forearm. And you can see that it actually enters the joint capsule, right, because here is the fibrous capsule on the lateral side. It actually enters the joint capsule and goes through the joint cavity and inserts into what we call the supraglenoid tubercle, right superior on the superior surface of the glenoid fossa. And of course, there's a lot of tension at times placed on this tendon, and it's going to bang up against the head of the humerus. All right, so what kind of structure is used in your body to control inflammation when muscles and bones are going to rub up against each other? Bursa or a tendon sheath. And in this particular case, we see a tendon sheath, which is what? A bursa, which is wrapped around the tendon of the long heads of the biceps brachii right here. And again, you have a fibrous capsule with a synovial membrane, which secretes synovial fluid into the tendon sheath cavity, which then decreases inflammation and allows the shoulder to work properly. All right, so what are the things I think that you have to know in lab? Well, you got to know this tendon. You got to know the tendon sheath and the subacromial bursa and this coracoacromial ligament. And when you see that term, coracoacromial ligament, you should think of, there's a lot of nice information in this name right here. So when you see ligament, what kind of structure is that? What kind of connection does a ligament provide? It's a bone-to-bone connection, right? All right, so two pieces of a bone are going to be connected together. And what are the two pieces? It's the coracoid process, which we don't see on this particular illustration, but you should know that the coracoid process is coming off anteriorly. And it also attaches to the acromial process. The acromial process we can see very nicely right here. So this is just a ligament that goes from the acromium over to the coracoid process that stabilizes the shoulder joint. All right, so let's see. What do you have to know? The humerus, right, the scapula plus the parts of the scapula like the glenoid fossa, the acromion process, and of course, since it's the humerus, this is the head of the humerus right here. So be sure you can label all of those things. All right, so that's it for the shoulder joint. Oh, here's a little bit different perspective. Here you can see the coracoacromial ligament very nicely going between the coracoid process and the acromium. Right, here's that subacromial bursa. And you can see the tendon sheath. And there's even another bursa right here called the subscapular bursa. And this is going to protect the tendon from the subscapularis muscle. Where do you think the subscapularis muscle is going to reside? Just let's practice some nomenclature. Subscapularis. It's going to be held within a fossa of some bone. Okay, and it's going to be the scapula. Yeah, scapula. Somebody said scapula. And how many different fossa does the scapula have? How many different fossa did we have to learn about? Okay, there are three. There are two that are posterior, and then one that is anterior. Right, and we're looking at the anterior side of the scapula, right? And so this is the subscapularis that's coming from a muscle that is contained within the subscapular fossa of the scapula. And it just so happens that we have a nice picture, an on-edge picture, a lateral picture of the scapula right here. So the subscapular fossa is in this area right here, right? The infraspinous fossa is here. The supraspinous fossa is right up over here. So those are the three kinds of fossa. And guess what this looks like right here where I have the cursor? That's the coracoacromial ligament, right? And you can see it spanning across the head of the humerus very nicely. And you can see the glenoid labrum right here as well, very nicely. Okay. Elbow. We don't get to talk about the elbow very much, but here is a picture of the hip. You're not responsible for this one, but I did mention the ligamentum teres at one point in time. Okay, we can see it coming from the acetabulum and then attaching to this location right here in the head of the femur. Oh, I suppose you could see that on a practicum, right? I think you had to know what that spot was on the head of the femur. Can anybody remember what that little spot was? That's the, fovea, which means a pit. Capitis, which means what? The head. The head of the femur, right? And there's also a very important blood vessel that goes through here nourishing this part of the femur so that it doesn't die. All right. But now these are figures that you should know, right? These are the knee. And the knee has a number of different bursa, a number of different ligaments, plus it has an articular disc as well, which we call the menisci. So let's look at this picture, this one first, right? And then go back. All right, so the knee is between the femur and the fibula and tibia, mostly the tibia. These are what we call the condylar surfaces. And in the leg, of course, you got to know which bone is medial and lateral. So that you should know right now. Which bone in the leg is medial? That is the tibia. Fantastic, right? Because someone might ask you, what's the name of that bulge on your ankle on the medial side? Right, like this one right here. And you're going to say, the medial malleolus, and that's a part of the tibia, right? That's part of the tibia. And the lateral malleolus is part of the fibula. All right, so those are really important to know. All right, so we have some ligaments that protect the knee from abducting and adducting. So what the heck does that mean? Show me with your hand. Show me with your fingers. I got to tell you what I want to see. What does abduction mean? Yeah, when you spread your fingers out, right? When you move your hands, okay, because I'm going to be in anatomic position, when you move your wrist like that, away from midline, is abduction, okay? And should you be able to abduct your leg, okay, at the knee? Should you be able to bend your leg like that at your knee? No way, right? Okay, that's bad. It happens, unfortunately, but something's going to break, right? All right, so let's see if I can figure this out. You have some collateral ligaments, right? You have a lateral collateral ligament and a medial collateral ligament, and they could be just as well named the tibial collateral ligament and the fibular collateral ligament, right? So those we use interchangeably. So what's the function of this tibial collateral ligament, or the medial collateral ligament right here? The medial one would be, for instance, on this side over here, right? Along with my little finger and my ulna, if I was going to use my hand. What does that medial collateral ligament prevent at the knee? Because I can't bend my knee, so I'm going to use my wrist. Okay?
It prevents adduction.
Yeah, because this ligament right here is not going to prevent, right, an inward bending of the knee, like the, I mean of the leg like that, because the ligament, that's going to reduce the tension on the ligament. What it's going to prevent is the motion away, right? Because it's going to apply tension across the knee, so it's going to prevent that motion laterally is what we call what? Abduction. Okay. While the lateral collateral ligament is going to prevent adduction of the knee, so that your knee just works as a hinge, it can't rock back and forth,
so
right?
You're saying for the lateral one?
Okay, the lateral one, yeah, lateral one prevents adduction. Yeah, adduction, ADD, adduction. That lateral collateral ligament won't allow the knee to do this.
Okay.
Because it will resist that tension that's applied. And the medial collateral ligament will resist abduction, won't allow the knee to move like that. Okay. So those are two important ligaments to know. And, okay, two other motions that are not allowed by the knee. And my knees don't do this, so I can't show you. I can't think of another joint, all right, and except for maybe your jaw. Your jaw you can jut out. You call that protraction, okay, and then retraction is when it juts back posterior. Your knee shouldn't move anterior or posterior either. Your knee should not be able to protract or retract. So there are two more ligaments that stabilize the knee in that direction as well, and those are the cruciate ligaments. Why do we call those cruciate ligaments? Why do we call them cruciate? Because they cross over each other like this. They form an X or a cross. All right, they form an X or a cross. And there are two. There's an anterior cruciate ligament and a posterior cruciate ligament. The anterior prevents protraction, because as the tibia moves anteriorly, tension is applied to the ACL, or anterior cruciate ligament, and it prevents that motion. While the posterior cruciate ligament prevents retraction of the tibia. All right, so those are what those two tendons are for. All right, so we got the collateral ligaments, the cruciate ligaments, here and here. And then this apparatus down here that we see attached to this part, this proximal epiphysis of the tibia right here, this tendon stabilizes the knee joint, but it's really attached to very powerful muscles of the thigh that we're going to talk about real soon. All right, so this is what we call the patellar ligament that goes from this process right here. What's the name of this process? That could be on the practicum coming up this week. It's on the tibia, so I like tibial tuberosity, right? Tibial tuberosity. And here is another example or an exception to the rule that a process is for always muscle attachment. Most of the time that's correct. But here is a process, and it is really a site for attachment of what? A ligament. But this is kind of a special case, right, because it attaches to the patella. So this strictly is a ligament, but on the superior side of the patella, we have a tendon, right? So actually the patellar ligament really is acting like a tendon, even though it's a bone-to-bone connection. And the muscles that this tendon attaches to are the quadriceps muscles. All right, and this, so these tendons right here, this tendon and this ligament, is for extension of the knee. When the quadriceps contract, and that produces a kicking motion of the knee, and that's extension. All right. The last thing of the knee, we have some articular discs made out of fibrocartilage, and these we call menisci. Right? There's C-shaped fibrocartilage discs within the knee. And here is the medial meniscus, and here is the lateral meniscus. Two different ones. And as you get out to the tips of the C, it gets thinner and thinner and thinner, and these are the areas that are most easily damaged because they're so thin. All right, let me see if there's another ligament. Okay, there's another ligament, but I don't know if you have to know it. It's this one right here. All right, that's called a transverse ligament, but it's not in any of your figures, so you don't have to know that one. Okay. All right, here's a couple other really good views of the knee. These might be in your study guide. I think this lower one is. I'm not so sure about this superior one. But what is really nice to see on this illustration are the cruciate ligaments. Right? For instance, this is the anterior side of the knee. This is the posterior side. So this ligament that is coursing anteriorly, that's the anterior cruciate ligament, that's going to prevent protraction unless this ligament gets stretched, and the posterior cruciate ligament is going to prevent retraction, okay, at the knee. And look what we have here. This is a bursa, right? Can you see that as being a bursa? It's a pillow filled with synovial fluid. And this is the infrapatellar bursa. Here's the suprapatellar bursa. And here we have the prepatellar bursa, right? And then all these bursa just prevent inflammation of the knee. Okay, so that's pretty much it for the knee. All right, well, here you can see an injury occurring to a knee. For instance, when the knee is traumatized with, okay, what kind of trauma is this placing on the knee? Is it lateral or medial? How are we going to know? It's lateral because here is the fibula right here. So what's the motion? What's the inappropriate motion that this knee is going through right now? Okay. It is going through, since it's bending out laterally, it is abduction. And so what ligament is going to prevent or should prevent abduction? It should be on the one on the opposite side, which is what? The medial collateral ligament. But in this particular case, the trauma is way too strong and it actually rips that tendon open. Okay, if it's trauma from the medial side, then it's what? The lateral collateral ligament that would prevent adduction, right? When the leg moves toward midline, that would be adduction. Unless it's too great a trauma, then the lateral collateral ligament would break in that particular case. Okay. Oh, yeah, let's go back and look at that. Okay, so here we have a knee. And you can see that it's either bending away from midline or toward midline at the knee. And that's not a proper motion for the knee, right? The knee should just be purely a hinge joint where it can flex, okay, and extend. It shouldn't abduct or adduct. So there are ligaments that normally prevent abduction and adduction, all right? So let's clearly see if we can define what abduction and adduction are. So remember, the tibia is the medial bone in the leg, the fibula is a lateral bone, so the foot, or the ankle, and this leg right here is what? Moving away from midline, that's what we call abduction, right? When you move away from midline, abduction. Normally, what prevents that? This medial collateral ligament. But in this case, there's too much pressure being applied, and that medial collateral ligament actually breaks. And now we have abduction occurring at the knee because of damage to the medial collateral ligament. If on the other hand, right, if you have trauma going to the medial side of the knee, then it's going to be the lateral collateral ligament that's going to prevent that from happening. All right, so if you apply trauma to the medial side of the knee, then the leg is going to bend the other way. What do we call bending in toward midline? That is adduction. Right, so the lateral collateral ligament prevents adduction at the knee. Okay. So these are pretty good figures to look at. All right, so does anybody have any questions on joints? Okay. I did want to... I did want to show you some interactive exercises. All right, so let's see if we can figure out how to label this knee right here, okay? And you have access to these interactive exercises and Blackboard. What button do you find them under? Yeah, weekly enhancements. Look under the weekly enhancements button, and there are, I'll show you where that is in just a second. All right, so let's see. How about the pre-patellar bursa? Pre-patellar, where are you going to look? Anterior to the patella. I tell you what, let me put this back. So where's the patella? Here's the patella. All right, so the pre-patellar bursa should be right here. Okay, ding. All right. Let's see. What about quadriceps femoris tendon? All right, so the quadriceps femoris are muscles up here in the thigh. And here is the tendon that's attaching the muscles to the patella. So here is the, ding, good one. Okay. How about the infrapatellar fat pad? Infrapatellar, so here's the patella. Infra is going to be below the patella. And here's a bunch of yellow stuff right here. That's got to be adipose tissue. So I would say right here. All right, so... Again, this fat helps absorb friction and trauma. And what about the suprapatellar bursa? So here's the patella. Look above the patella. Here it is right here. Suprapatellar bursa. What about articular cartilage? Where should we look for articular cartilage? Yeah, on the head of the... on the condyles of the femur and condyles of the tibia. So that's close. I'd have to say that's it. All right. What about femur? Where's the femur? Right here. Deep infrapatellar bursa. Uh-oh. Where's the deep infrapatellar? So here is here's one, right? It is deep to the patellar ligament. Here it is right here. All right, and patella. Well, we've been talking about the patella. Let's get it out of the way. Quadriceps femoris. This muscle of the thigh, anterior thigh. Let's get another one out of the way. Tibia. Okay, now, how many different menisci do we have? Oh, I only see one labeled. All right, so I can't tell if that's medial or lateral, depending on exactly where this section is. Now, what kind of section does that look like to you? Does that look like a transverse section or a coronal section or a sagittal section? And since I see a nice condyle right here of the femur, it's got to be either pretty far medial or lateral with respect to the knee. It's not going right through the middle of the knee because we don't have a condyle right in the middle of the knee. Superficial infrapatellar bursa. Do we have a spot? Yeah, right here. And what about Bursa under the lateral head of the gastrocnemius. I don't know if you can see this one, but the gastrocnemius is going to be in your posterior leg, which is your, what's a common name for your posterior leg? That's your calf muscle. All right, so the gastrocnemius is going to be in this location right here, and there's going to be a tendon that comes up all the way across the knee and inserts into the femur. Right, so it's going to bang up against the condyle of a femur, but there is a bursa right here. All right, so that's the bursa underneath the lateral head of the gastrocnemius. Okay, what else we got? Synovial membrane. Synovial membrane. What is that? Where might that be? Maybe right here. Okay. So what's the job of the synovial membrane? It produces synovial fluid, right? Produces synovial fluid that is in the joint cavity. All right, so where's the joint cavity at? It could be here or it could be here. That looks like it's pointing. Oh yeah, because here's it's pointing. Look at the top left-hand part of the square. That's got to be it. All right, joint capsule, and then this thing right here is the patellar ligament. All right, so these are really good exercises for you to practice. All right, and I have five different links, which I put up by these bullet points, but for some reason they keep moving around down over here. I don't know why that is. All right, so, but here are just different joints. You can find even the structure of a synovial joint right here to practice. Basically just a drag and drop as well. Maybe we should check it out. All right, so periosteum, where are you going to find periosteum at? That's a membrane that is on the outside of a bone someplace. So periosteum, could this be periosteum here? Yeah, maybe. Maybe there's a better place. Periosteum? I don't know. Periosteum. All right, let's try this. But why does this have something going up? Okay. This is just a platform to put the word. And this is it. So that would be a cruciate ligament. Okay, so that's not what we want. We want something... Yeah, probably that. Okay, fantastic. All right, so this is just a little bit trickier to see. Here is the patella. All right, how about synovial membrane? Synovial membrane, I like this one. Okay, because here's the synovial membrane right here, secreting synovial fluid. Oh, we got another synovial membrane. Synovial membrane maybe here? Yes. Okay. Oh, no. Why not? Okay, meniscus. Maybe I didn't put it in the right spot. Synovial membrane. No? Come on. Synovial membrane. So, like right here? I tell you what, let me put it back and see what other things we have. Synovial membrane. You know, I would actually say joint cavity for this one. I think I like joint cavity. Okay. What else can we see? Well, we see articular cartilage for sure here. This is articular cartilage, so this goes here. Fat pad, that should be easy to see. That's this one. Bursa. Here's a bursa, right? The suprapatellar bursa. Joint capsule. Well, I can't tell. Probably here. No. Pointing right here, synovial membrane. Okay. Intracapsular ligament. Oh, well, that's a weird term. And then joint capsule. Oh, I'll put it back. Okay, here's a line pointing right here. Joint capsule. Okay. All right, so I think if you work through those 4 or 5 times, that should be pretty easy. All right, so let's see, where do you find these things? All right, so under weekly enhancements, and okay, so for appendicular skeleton, if you guys want to practice still for maybe a practicum coming up, here are all the different bones that you can practice, right? And there are a number of different labeling exercises. Some might be more beneficial to some students than others, okay? And there's some videos and various tutorials in here. And the essential study partner is pretty good reading. It supplements your textbook, but there's also drag and drop exercises in the essential study partner. But I can't isolate the web pages. They're all linked together, so you actually have to move from page to page to find the exercises that you like. Okay. All right, so that's it for articulation. So we're going to move on just a little bit to muscle. All right, so I'm going to start talking about muscle, which is chapter 10. This is an introductory chapter to muscle. And so muscle is a different kind of tissue altogether compared to bone and ligaments and tendons. So let's just review. What kind of tissue is a ligament? A ligament is a bone-to-bone connection. But what kind of tissue is it? And when I'm thinking tissue, I think of 4 major kinds. Okay, and cartilage is pretty close, but that's not a major kind of tissue. What are the 4 major kinds of tissue in your body? You've got connective tissue, that's like the second one I think of. Epithelium is the first one I think of, right? So we got epithelium, connective tissue, muscle tissue, and nervous tissue, right? So we just got done talking about bones and tendons and ligaments, which are what kind of tissue? Number 2, it's kind of a connective tissue, right? So bone is a CT, osseous connective tissue. Ligaments and tendons are what kind of connective tissue? Just as a review, it is dense, regular connective tissue. So both ligaments and tendons have fibroblasts that are laying out collagen in the matrix. So tendons and ligaments have a lot of collagen. All right, so now we're going to go to a completely different kind of tissue. It's not connective tissue, it is muscle. So what is muscle specialized to do? It doesn't really connect parts of your body up like connective tissue. It is specialized for contraction, right? So muscle contracts, and if it's attached to different parts of your body, then different parts of your body for sure are going to move as well. So movement is really an important feature of muscle. But if I was going to think about what skeletal muscle or cardiac muscle or smooth muscle is specialized for, I would say contraction, right? Contraction. Because muscles can only pull. They really can't push on anything. If there's a part of your body that can push, it's because there's a muscle someplace that is pulling and contracting via some kind of lever system to exert a push. All right. But there are some important functions of muscle, just besides contraction. All right, so movement is certainly one of them. When muscles contract, that does provide for motion. But muscles right now, even though, I tell you what, are you moving right now? Are you moving a lot or maybe just a little bit? Maybe just a little bit, right? But you're still using a lot of muscles in your body even though you're not moving, just to keep your head erect, right, and sitting in your chair. Because if you were to pass out right now and all your muscles relaxed, what would happen? Well, your head would hit the tabletop and it would bounce off, and then it would hit the chair and bounce off, and then it would hit the floor, right, and bounce a couple times. All right, so even though you're not moving, muscles are still very important for maintaining posture, right? So posture is an important function. Another real important function is joint stabilization. So muscles are very important for protecting joints and making sure that joints only move in a certain kind of way. As a matter of fact, there's three things that allow for joint stabilization, and this kind of ties in with what happens if you ever damage a joint or a ligament that goes across a joint. How is it that you can rehabilitate that joint? Well, we saw that cartilage doesn't have many blood vessels, so it doesn't regenerate. So you can't really rebuild the cartilage of a joint once a joint gets damaged. And dense regular connective tissue in ligaments and tendons doesn't have a high vascular supply either, so they don't regenerate very well either. So how do you rehabilitate a joint? How do you get it back to normal function? And that is because you can work on muscles that work across a particular joint. So if you need to rehabilitate a joint, you really have to work on muscles that are involved with producing motion at that joint. That's really about the only way to do that. Right, so muscles are really important for joint stabilization and even rehabilitation of joints. Because tendons and ligaments you can't get shorter, but you can get a muscle shorter, because what is a muscle designed to do? It's designed to shorten anyway, right? So muscles can help the rejuvenation of a joint once it gets damaged. All right, and another function of muscle is production of heat. Because right now, what is your body temperature? Are you at room temperature? Well, you might be kind of close. It's a little warm in here, but not too bad. You know, it's maybe 70-something, but are you 70 degrees? No, you're up by 98? Yeah, 98.6, something like that. So you're way above room temperature. And so muscles, contraction of muscles, generate heat so that we can maintain our body temperature. So these are all important functions of muscle. Movement, posture maintenance, joint stabilization, and generation of body heat to maintain temperature homeostasis. All right, then there's some characteristics that separate muscle tissue from other kinds of tissues in the body. And that is, well, we said muscle shortens. So contractility is an important characteristic of muscle. And muscle is excitable. What does that mean? That just means that muscles can be relaxed and then they can be stimulated into contraction. And different muscles are excited by different kinds of things. Right? Some muscles are under voluntary control. That means you have conscious control whether that muscle is going to contract or not under most circumstances. So we call that voluntary control. There are other muscles that you cannot control, like your heart. It's regulated automatically in your body, and smooth muscle is regulated automatically in your body as well. All right, but nonetheless, smooth muscle can be relaxed, or it can shorten, it can contract when it is stimulated. We call that excitability. Extensibility, it means that muscles can not only shorten, but when they relax, they can actually stretch. It's very easy to stretch a muscle, right, as opposed to a tendon or a ligament. Those should not stretch, but muscles definitely should. And for instance, let's think of, all right, so what is this motion of my elbow or my forearm called? When I go from 180 degrees across the elbow to less than 180 degrees, to 90 degrees, to 10 degrees, right? That's flexion, okay? All right, so when my forearm is being flexed, my bicep is contracting, is shortening, right? But there is another muscle that extends my arm, right? So these two muscles are working in and antagonistically to each other, in opposition to each other. So we got the biceps in the anterior arm, the triceps in the posterior arm. So when the biceps contracts, guess what has to happen to the triceps? It's got to relax. But more importantly, it actually has to stretch. It has to elongate, right? So that's what we mean by extensibility. In order to have precise control and motion in your body, muscles have to extend when the antagonistic muscle contracts, right? So when the biceps contracts, the triceps has to relax and extend. And the fourth property is elasticity. And that's pretty important, because once you stretch a biceps, All right, once you extend it, right, whenever you stretch it and then release it, guess what happens? It goes back to its resting length. All right, so a muscle has a resting length. It can shorten when it contracts, right? And then when it relaxes, it goes back to its original length due to elasticity. And then when the muscle is relaxed and you pull on it, it can actually stretch. So those are all important kinds of characteristics of muscle. All right, and you should be able to classify muscle and probably even recognize what these different kinds of muscle look like underneath the microscope. What a microscopic view of skeletal muscle is, cardiac muscle, and smooth muscle. All right, and so if you're going to talk about skeletal muscle, I don't know if anybody still has a picture in their mind of what skeletal muscle looks like, but if somebody does, maybe tell me, what does skeletal muscle look like? It is striated. It has all these stripes, and we're going to see where those stripes come from. Maybe not today or next time for sure. Okay, it is striated. And I tell you what, maybe I can find a picture of what skeletal muscle looks like. I can't. But this is not a bad picture. All right, we see these striations. Here is the cell membrane of a skeletal muscle cell. And on this picture, you should be able to tell me that this is a good picture right here. All right, we see all the striations. It is what? Long and narrow. Skeletal muscle cells are long and narrow. They're not branched. So they kind of look like a thread or a fiber. So another name for a muscle cell is actually what? A muscle fiber. So skeletal muscle and smooth muscle tissue, okay, the cells that make up these two kinds of tissues are what we call fibers. On the other hand, cardiac muscle isn't long and narrow, it's branched. And so we don't call it a fiber because it has all these branching characteristics. All right, we have to call it a muscle cell. The other thing is that cardiac muscle is very short. It's not long and narrow. All right, so let's talk about what a general muscle looks like. Because we looked at what a general bone looks like, so let's look and see what some features of a muscle look like. So this right here is a particular muscle in your body, and that could be, for instance, the biceps or the triceps or the brachioradialis muscle. And we can see that this really is an organ because it contains muscle tissue, right? But it also contains connective tissue, and it can, because I see blood vessels, and also has nerve. So what do we call something in your body that has many different kinds of tissues that make it up? That would be an organ, right? So this is a muscle organ right here. There's an outer covering of the whole muscle. Just like we had an outer covering of a bone. What did we call the outer covering of a bone? That was the periosteum, right? The outer covering of a muscle is what we call the epimysium. Epi meaning on top, right? And there's connective tissue then which merges and helps attach itself to a tendon which attaches this muscle to the bone. So the tendon and the epimysium are continuous with each other. That's the connective tissue that surrounds the whole muscle. But if we cut into that muscle, what do we see? We see some other structures. We see some bundles of muscles. We see different compartments, right? And these different compartments are what we call bundles or fascicles. And these fascicles are separated from each other by connective tissue sheaths as well. So here is some connective tissue surrounding a fascicle. All right, so here is a fascicle that's been pulled out of the muscle so that we can actually take a look at it. And this connective tissue layer around every fascicle and is separating out different fascicles, that's what we call the perimysium. Okay, and mesium, of course, stands for muscle. You would know that that's not a bone if you see mesium, right? You should just think of muscle. So you got the perimysium. But inside a fascicle, do you see other structures? Do you see other structures inside of a fascicle? Look at all these little circles right here. Right? So there are structures that make up a fascicle, and these are the muscle fibers. So this diagram is not to scale, because what really is another name for a muscle fiber? It's a cell. Right? And a cell you can't see with your naked eye, so this is just an illustration of where you would find cells. More importantly, it kind of tells you what the building blocks of a muscle are. All right? So for instance, if we put a bunch of muscle fibers together, or muscle cells, what do we get? We get a fascicle, right? And if we put a bunch of fascicles together, what do we get? We get a muscle, right? And of the organ, a muscle organ. Another way of asking it is, what's the building block of a muscle organ? It's a fascicle. What's the building block of a fascicle? It's a muscle cell. Okay. All right. Furthermore, there is going to be a membrane surrounding every muscle fiber or every muscle cell, and that's what we call the endomysium. All right. So how are you going to remember that? Well, epi means on top, endo means on the bottom. All right. And then there's one that we don't have in bones, right, surrounding every fascicle. That's the perimysium. Peri means surrounding the fascicles. Right, epi on top, endo in bottom, and the peri is going to be in the middle. All right, so what do we see if we look at a muscle fiber? Look, we see these little stripes. What do we call these stripes right here? These are striations, right? So these are striations, and we might actually see where these come from today. All right, but we're still not done understanding the structure of muscle, because a muscle fiber has building blocks in it as well. All right, so let's see if we can find a picture that shows us the inside of a muscle cell. All right, here we go. So here is a muscle cell right here, and we can see the striations, and if we cut it open, we see even more structures inside of it, more tubes that are filled with stuff. And think of a cell. You studied a cell already. What are the little things that make up a cell inside the cell, that make up part of the cytoplasm? Organelles. Right. So here we have a muscle cell or a muscle fiber, and we see things inside the cell. So these are all organelles. For instance, here is an organelle which contains chromosomes and DNA and controls the activity of the cell. This is what we call the nucleus of the cell. Maybe if we look really close, we're going to find some organelles that make ATP. What would that be? That would be mitochondria. Right? But mostly what we find inside of a muscle fiber cell, because a muscle is specialized for contraction, are these special organelles that actually contract. And these are what we call myofibrils. All right, so myo means muscle, fibril means what? Tiny, tiny fibers. And you can see that there are scores of these myofibrils that line up along the long axis of a muscle fiber. And if you look at a single myofibril, what do you see? You see this pattern. What do we call this pattern again? Striations, right? So even within these organelles, we see striations. And then if we look at neighboring myofibrils that are next to each other, what can you tell me about these really thick bands and thin bands? How do they line up in neighboring myofibrils? Are they all kind of scattered around, or do they line up perfectly on top of each other? Okay, just like the margins in a book, every page, the margin is in exactly the same place. All right, so these striations line up perfectly between all the myofibrils that make up a muscle fiber. So that way, when you look at a muscle, it looks just completely striated. It's just not a blurry, gray, homogeneous structure. You actually see the striations on the outside of the cell because they all line up perfectly. Okay. All right, so the myofibrils. What's a nice way of thinking about a myofibril? It's really an organelle inside of a muscle cell, and this organelle is specialized for contraction. Okay. A couple last things. If we pull this myofibril out, right, we see some other things that make it up besides these striations. I can see some very thin proteins. Maybe I'll zoom into this region right here. Okay, here are some proteins. And that kind of looks blue to me. Is that blue to you? Okay, these blue ones, all right, and then we got these red ones right here. All right, how would you describe the blue one compared to this red one by its shape? Okay, by its shape. The blue ones are what? They're thin. I like that. Yeah, the blue ones are thin and the red ones are thick. So guess what? The red ones we call thick filaments, and these blue ones we call thin filaments. All right, so now we can pretty much completely put a muscle together in terms of its building blocks. What's the smallest kind of building block we have? Those are filaments, which, how many different kinds of filaments are there? Okay, right now you've got thick filaments and thin filaments. Oh, these little rods that we see inside a myofibril, they're proteins, right? This thick one right here is made from myosin. So those two terms can be used interchangeably. A myosin filament is what, the thick one or the thin one? It's the thick. Myosin is the thick filament. And the thin filament is the actin, right? So sometimes we call these filaments or myofilaments. They go by the same name. All right, so myosin is the thick myofilament. So if we put a bunch of filaments together, right, as being a building block of something, what is it going to build? It's going to build this big structure right here, which is this right here. That is a myofibril, which is, you should think of that as being an organelle for contraction. And if we put a bunch of myofibrils together, what do we get? We get a muscle cell. What's another name for a muscle cell? A fiber. We'll do this back and forth a couple times so it can come to the tip of your tongue. And if we put a bunch of muscle fibers together, what do we get? We get fascicles. I like that. All right, so let's see if we can go back and find the fascicle picture. All right, there's the fascicle picture. All right, so here's a fiber. We put a bunch of muscle fibers or cells together, we get a fascicle. And when we put a bunch of fascicles together, what do we get? The muscle organ. All right, so let's go back now down the other way. Let's use building blocks to describe the structure of a muscle. So here we have a muscle, the organ. What's the building block of muscle, the organ? It's fascicles. All right, and what's the building block of a fascicle? Muscle fibers or cells, all right? And what's the building block of a muscle fiber? I don't know if I want to tell you. I don't know if go to the next picture. We'll just ask. That's a myofibril. And what's the building block of a myofibril? The myofilaments, or you could say filaments. All right, then furthermore, what are the two kinds of filaments? You got thick and thin, or you could say myosin and actin. All right, so we try to develop a picture of how a muscle is put together with those building blocks. All right, so let me just show you that once again. Here is a muscle, the organ, which has the epimysium around it. The building block is a fascicle, which has the perimysium around it. And the building block of a fascicle is a muscle cell or muscle fiber that has endomysium around it. Furthermore, there are building blocks to a muscle fiber, and those are the myofibrils, and there are building blocks within a myofibril that we call myofilaments, of which there are two kinds. There's the thin one, which is actin, and the thick one, which is what we call myosin. All right, so that's just a structural organization of muscle, so we got to use that to describe how a muscle contracts. Okay, there's a concept that I like to use in my classes, and it's called the structural and functional unit of something. And we talked about life before, And so I define what the structural and functional unit of life is, right? And if you understand something about that structural and functional unit, then you have a pretty good idea of, right, that big complicated topic like life. What's the building block of life? It's the cell, right? And so you should think, well, it's got organelles and cytoplasm and a nucleus and all that kind of stuff, right? You should layer that understanding of that real simple idea, right? Well, there's a structural and functional unit of contraction in skeletal muscle. And so I want you to have that on the tip of your tongue. And it's maybe a little bit complicated. It's got a couple pieces to it, right? But if you can group all of those pieces into your understanding of what it's called, that will help you appreciate how a whole muscle contracts. And the structural and functional unit of contraction is defined by these striations that we see in a muscle. And it goes from this line that zigzagged over here to this zigzagged line over there. And those are called the Z lines or Z discs. They weren't called Z lines or Z discs because they're zigzagged at all. They're named Z discs because they're the endpoints of that structural and functional unit for contraction, which is called a sarcomere. All right, so if somebody ever asks you, what's the structural and functional unit for contraction, you're going to say sarcomere. All right, now what the heck does that mean? Sarco, anytime you hear that term sarco, you should think of skeletal muscle. Okay, like sarcomere we find inside of a skeletal muscle. The plasma membrane that is surrounding a muscle fiber is called the sarcolemma. So sarcolemma is a plasma membrane. So sarcolemma is a plasma membrane around what kind of cell? A skeletal muscle cell, the sarcolemma. The endoplasmic reticulum. What did we learn about endoplasmic reticulum in a regular kind of cell? Anybody remember anything about endoplasmic reticulum? Rough ER makes proteins. Smooth ER makes lipids. But smooth endoplasmic reticulum also stores calcium ions. All right, so that's another function. Hopefully I mentioned that. Sometimes it's easy for me to forget that particular function. But in a skeletal muscle cell, we don't call it endoplasmic reticulum. That seems like it's a long enough word already, but I think we make it a little bit longer in skeletal muscle. We call it the sarcoplasmic reticulum. All right, and sarcoplasmic reticulum is the same thing as smooth endoplasmic reticulum. I don't see any on this slide, but we're going to show you sarcoplasmic reticulum pretty soon. The job of the sarcoplasmic reticulum is to store calcium, primarily. All right, and why do you know that sarcoplasmic reticulum is inside a skeletal muscle cell? Because of the prefix on that word, what? Sarco, right? Anytime you hear sarco, you should just immediately think of skeletal muscle. Okay, so let's look at the sarcomere right here. Well, you can see that it repeats itself from one end to the other all the way, right, from top to bottom of this muscle fiber, right? It just repeats itself thousands of times over in every myofibril, and furthermore, every sarcomere is lined up exactly compared to neighboring myofibrils. That's why skeletal muscle is striated. So the major proteins that make up a sarcomere, we said, were these thick filaments, or myosin, and thin filaments, which is the actin molecule right here. All right, so these are myofilaments. What you should know, of those two myofilaments, which ones attach to the endpoints of the sarcomere, or the Z disc of the sarcomere? Is it the actin or is it the myosin? Okay, you can see the actin attaching to the Z disc right here. The myosin is kind of floating in the middle, right? Because it's attached to this middle line. Guess what we call the middle line of a sarcomere? It's the M line, okay? So some things aren't too bad to remember. That's what holds the myosin molecules in position, along with another little molecule, this little spring right here. This is what we call titin. Oh, good, it's labeled. All right, that's a titin molecule. The titin doesn't allow for contraction, right? What what the Titan really allows for is the elastic properties of a muscle. So when you stretch a muscle and let go, the muscle is going to go back to its resting length. What protein within the sarcomere pulls the muscle back to its resting position? That is the Titan molecule. All right, so a Titan can't make the muscle get shorter from a resting position, but it allows a muscle to go from elongated to its normal resting length. That's the job of Titan. So Titan really isn't for contraction. It's just for the elastic properties of muscle. All right, so when we look at a sarcomere, there's a couple other things we want to look at. All right, we see alternating bands that are light and dark and light and dark from one end of the muscle to the other, and we name these bands. This light band is what we call the eye band because of the way that light passes through it, if it's polarized light. All right, but it's kind of handy for anatomy classes because what's the vowel in the word light? Eye, right? And so we call that the eye band. That's a really easy way to remember that this lightly colored band is the eye band. All right, and the dark band where we find myosin molecules is what? It's a dark band. And what's the vowel in dark? A, right? So we call that the A band. So that's pretty easy to remember. This probably is an exam figure, right, that you'll have in about a month or so. So here you got the A band and the light band. And in the A band, it's dark because you have the big thick filaments, and the light band is light because you don't have any myosin in there. You just have the actin molecules. Okay. So we talked about most of the structure of the sarcomere, okay? But let's just review. What are the endpoints of a sarcomere? The Z discs, and then right smack in the middle, you've got the M line. And then there's a really dark band within the middle of a sarcomere, which is what band is that? That is the A band. And then on the ends of the sarcomere, we have some lightly colored bands, which are the I bands. Right. All right, so when a muscle contracts, I want you to ponder this particular question. All right, so what is muscle specialized to do, once again? It's specialized to contract. All right, so we look at some proteins right here, namely the myosin proteins, the thick filaments, and the actin proteins, which are the thin filaments. I want you to tell me next time when we meet on Monday, which one of those two proteins actually gets shorter. Maybe they both do, or maybe one does and not the other. All right, so try to figure out by Monday which one of these proteins here actually gets shorter, which causes the muscle, the whole muscle, to contract. Okay? So just kind of look at that diagram and see if you can't figure that out. All right, so did the sign-in sheet get around today? Where's that sign-in sheet at? Yeah, did everybody up there sign it? Okay, really good. So that's it for today.